someone. Always trust my gut.
Hello and welcome to Gutted. I'm Elise.
And I'm Tony, and we're here to spill our guts about horror films. And today we have something new and exciting for you all. We have our very first Gutted Indie Spotlight episode.
Many filmmakers get their start in the horror genre, and often indie horror films with minimal budget. We love horror in general, but what specifically makes indie horror films so special is that these filmmakers are passionate about the projects that they are making. Not that other filmmakers are not passionate about what they're making, but specifically indie horror makers, they put a lot of themselves into these films. Mm-hmm. A lot of their blood, sweat, and tears, and their own money into getting their films up and running and produced. And often with these indie horror films, you get more original content. You don't get the next rehashing of a beloved classic horror film. You get original ideas and stories. Often these filmmakers are more willing to make bold, daring choices.
We love exploring new stories and new filmmakers, whether they have no budget at all or if they have a little bit of a budget. You know, it's making a movie is so hard. So with these indie spotlight episodes, we're hoping that we can help spread some of the word about what these filmmakers are up to, because it's tough even to promote your movie, to make the movie. Every single step of the way is a struggle. So this is just one way for us to have some really cool conversations with some horror fans and people who make horror movies, and just to expand the community a little bit.
Today, we'll be talking to writer and producer Zoe Wassman of the upcoming horror comedy Bampire. We'll also be talking to Gregory Cahill and Adam Metropolis, two of the directors of the horror anthology The Nexus, now available on streaming.
First up, we have Zoe Wassman of Bampire, in which five community college students and their professors set out to document unprecedented evidence of a rare fanged deer species never before seen in the foothills of the Cascades, the musk deer. Or is it something more sinister? Let's check out a trailer for our Bampire.
Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together and welcome to the stage, the incomparable Bambi!
Zoe Wassman, you are the writer of Bampire. Just going to do a little icebreaker first here. I like this question a lot when I hear it on other podcasts. But what was your first intro into horror? So whether that was watching an entire horror film or a small horror snippet when you were like three or four, what was your intro into horror?
Ultimately, the first kind of like horror movie that I ever watched was actually The Descent, which is like an all-female cast, like a wonderful large ensemble, great plot, incredible production value. So I think when I watched that and it scared the pants off of me, I thought to myself, like, wow, how is it that I can experience these sensations from the safety of my own home, you know, and have them impact me so deeply? So I watched The Descent, and that definitely gave me like my first taste of what was out there. And it definitely holds up. So I feel like I got my love for horror pretty honest. But my dad actually really, really loved horror movies when he was younger, mostly because he would get to watch them with his older uncles, right? So it kind of made him feel like this is like a rite of passage. I'm getting to do this really grown up thing. And so after hearing all those stories, I think I kind of had that same like zeitgeist around horror. Like that's what adulthood looks like, is getting to sit down and like watch a horror movie. Eventually, he actually kind of like sat me down and showed me The Shining. One of the like, you know, second or third horror movies I'd watched at the time, though he thought it was my first. And you know, that scene where Shelley comes down the stairs and there's the stack of paper and she starts going through it and she realizes all that her husband's written over the last, you know, 3 months of being out in this like Arctic wilderness is, you know, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. And that just fucked me up. Like, I just loved that I could be so afraid for her and so afraid of this situation. And as a writer, too, I was like, oh, gosh, writers are scary. and I think it really just kind of brought it home that, like, you don't need blood and guts and screaming and la, 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 la. It can be a silent, you know, beautiful grand room and a stack of paper. And right. I was like, I lost it. You know, I was not going to sleep that night. So that was probably like when I really realized like how powerful it could be, you know, and how subtle it could be too.
That's a sign of a good horror movie when it can creep into you and without the gore, which is fun too. The blood.
We like the gore as well. Yeah. We like all of it, but yes.
But when it creeps in, that psychological element, that's some good writing there. Yeah.
That'd have to be like a brutal one to.
Not to, you know, out anyone's ages, but how old were you when you watched The Descent?
Man, I probably watched that when I was like 7 or 8.
Oh my gosh.
Maybe. Yeah, I was pretty little. Like looking back, I really didn't think it was that big of a deal. You know, I watched like The Descent, my friends and I watched The Grudge, we watched the original It. Like, but it was one of those things where I had my homies with me. We were all just hanging out and trying to feel something, for lack of a better way of saying it. I lived in a really small town in rural Alaska. So I actually came from a village. And
oh, wow.
It's a very, very small community and not a lot going on. There's not even a movie theater. So, you know, we were just renting things from our local video store if we could get away with it and, you know, taking them home and trying to make our parents mad, you know, and and for the most part, we didn't even succeed. Like we were way too sneaky for our own good.
Yeah, but I love that.
Like those trips to the movie store definitely were some of the more formative parts of my childhood.
I love that you say this kind of rite of passage with horror. And I think a lot of horror lovers feel that way about horror movies, that it is like a rite of passage. And most parents don't necessarily condone, if not just completely shield their children from horror movies. So we have to be more creative in getting access to those movies. So we kind of feel it's like an accolade. We pat ourselves on the back when we get to go watch those movies.
That makes it all the much better, too, when you know you're not supposed to be doing it or it feels wrong.
Exactly. Like, I really love all movies. I love horror. It's like my first love. But truly, like, I think that movies that make you scream are just as important as movies that make you laugh and movies that make you cry. Like, I really think that act of being able to bring a sensory experience into someone's home is really a privilege, you know? And so as a horror writer and someone who is playing with those like more taboo feelings, those scarier themes, you know, my job is essentially to make people afraid, you know, to horrify them, right? Yeah. And I think there's something to be said about like just really treating that with a lot of respect. Because everybody loves like the blood and the guts and the gore and la, 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 la. But like, isn't it just that much better if it's, you know, wrapped up in a pretty package too, of having a good plot and, you know, great music and all of these things that like really just add to the experience. So I love horror in general because it plays with not just any feeling, but specifically ones that we're told to not seek out.
Yeah.
But they are like a really natural part of the human experience, to experience fear, to experience being unnerved or uncomfortable. They're things that we avoid, sure, but we also should have a right to access. We should be able to seek those feelings just the same way that we would seek being able to laugh. It's cathartic.
We always tell people who are non-horror fans who ask us, like, why do you guys love horror so much? And we always try to explain to them that it is this sort of safe space where you're able to experience those emotions you're talking about, and you're able to be scared and just see things that are a little more disturbing or, you know, fantastic, or
with the safety net of knowing that you're not actually going to be murdered by Freddy Krueger.
Out in the real world seeing like decapitated heads and stuff like that.
I've heard from non-horror lovers that like, oh, they have too many feelings, or they're too empathetic to like horror movies. But I kind of feel that horror lovers are very empathetic to the characters in those movies. And that's why we watch them, because we want to feel that connection with those characters and feel the gamut of emotions that they go through in this journey for that cathartic feeling that you were talking about.
Yeah, you mentioned talking about horror and being out in the woods in Alaska. And now you've written this film, Vampire, which looks awesome, by the way.
Thank you.
We checked you out on Instagram and
Indiegogo.
Mm. You sent us a little sizzle reel, so we got a little sneak peek. We feel very lucky to have seen that.
Yes, and the trailer on Indiegogo is amazing. It just looked like a blast to work on. The interviews from all the cast and crew, watching that trailer on Indiegogo just really makes you feel like, oh, wow, that looks like so much fun. I want to be a part of that.
Could you tell us about how the whole project got started and a little bit about all of that experience?
I joined my local filmmaking community about 4 or 5 years ago, and I hadn't really done much writing for screen at that point, but they kind of like welcomed me with open arms in a way that I just never had experienced before. And they, you know, I was doing costuming, I was doing production design. Suddenly I was just kind of like thrown into this rat race, for the lack of a better word, of all of these filmmakers just trying to do something. We didn't even know what. We were just like, we want to make art, we want to do it this way, and we know we need a team. So we'll be each other's team, and we'll make no money, and, you know, we'll just donate all of our time for, you know, years. I mean, things were already going on for years before I had joined up. So, you know, I just kind of fell right in with this like group of people who are all just incredibly amazing. Daniel Martinez, Rick Gates, just some like amazing like local folks who had already started, you know, kind of building this fire. Ultimately, around that same time, I met my co-creator, Malachi Tsukuya, and he was a local actor, super talented, and I'd worked with him a few times, but we hadn't done anything too serious yet. And so we started like, I say serious, but we started joking around because he had found out that these things existed that were called musk deer. And they're essentially like a rare fanged deer species. And so we started kind of throwing around this crazy idea. Like, what if, you know, vampires weren't just like vampire bats or like fanged bats? What if they were any fanged animal? So like even like a saber-toothed tiger going way back in time or whatever, you know? And what if they were just like more prevalent and more of like a shapeshifter, right, than just a traditional vampire? And we live in the Pacific Northwest, so deer are everywhere. And we were like, what a quirky, fun kind of like homage to our, you know, town that we're doing all this weird stuff in, Eugene, Oregon. That's where we're based out of. So we came up with this idea, started throwing it around. We took like 2 years developing the screenplay. And like the first person we brought it to was Taylor Morton, who was our director and another co-producer. And he is like nostalgia king, you know, of the documentary world. He's done an amazing like documentary about ska music from the 90s. He also did The Last Blockbuster, which was like Netflix's number one.
Yeah, that's so awesome. Yeah, we heard about that. That's really cool.
It's a beautiful piece. He does interviews with some of like the most iconic people in Hollywood. And it just kind of struck us that like this person like not only loves, you know, the era that we're writing in, but also has a taste for kind of like this weirder, quirkier stuff. Because I had found out that he was working on a movie that was called Space Beavers 2. Not one.
There's a two.
it was just such a funny idea, you know, that I had heard that, and I knew he had this background in like 90s themes, and I knew he'd gone to college like in Eugene in the 90s. So I was like, person is kind of like that human resource that I need to even start trying to bring this thing to life. And he just like picked that thing up and just started running with it. Like, he really encouraged us to dream big, to reach out to that upper echelon of like celebrity and out of kind of like our comfort zone of working with local actors. And we actually did like a nationwide casting search. So we had found this like wonderful ensemble of non-local actors and a handful of people from Oregon who are going to be in the movie. We had a massive crew of local filmmakers who are all willing to like essentially donate their time just so that we could make this movie.
That's
we had an amazing director who was bringing on board big names if we could afford them, but we had no money.
Yeah.
We were like still operating at this point. We even had like three of our major locations lined up, no money.
Wow.
And we couldn't get money. We tried for like 6-8 months, all of us asking just about everybody that we knew if they just like wanted to be a film producer, and even reaching out to like, you know, some real film investors and stuff like that. So it kind of came down to the wire, like, you know, either we do this or we don't, either we jump or we, you know, stay on the ledge. And at that point I decided to self-fund principal photography. Mm. So we were like, we'll take the risk. I'm going to put everything that I've ever saved into this movie. Because if I'm not willing to bet on us, how am I going to convince somebody else to?
Yeah.
You know, so even if it means that's all we get to do is shoot this movie in September. I don't know if it's going to go well. I don't know. We were setting out to do something insane. We're making a 90s era creature feature in the middle of the woods with a large ensemble
too.
Cast of young actors and no money.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's amazing.
Who does that?
That is the best thing. I love that you share that story because that's sort of the best thing about indie filmmaking. Horror is a good place for indie filmmakers to be and get their start because you can really do a lot and have a really creative ideas and people are like willing to
take a chance,
donate their time, yeah. Take a chance and just kind of like see what happens.
And accept the weird, which we love the trailer and how it seems to have a good amount of weird. What was the inspiration for some of the cartoon aspects in Vampire? Was it because we all know that in the 80s or before when we were children, there were a lot of really creepy children's cartoons.
Oh, yeah.
So were there any creepy children cartoons in particular that inspired some of this animation element?
I always reference Who Framed Roger Rabbit because that movie like absolutely scarred me. Yes.
I was afraid of that movie. I'm still to this day kind of afraid of
Christopher Lloyd.
I
know.
When his eyes get all buggy. Oh, my gosh.
If I see some sort of chemical spilling towards my feet, I'm like, I don't want to touch
it. No, it's dip. Yeah. I can't.
We know what happens.
Yeah.
So that's what I like to throw out there because for me, that's like the one that echoes the style that we're going through the most or going for the most. So what made us choose that is that we have a lot of animal interactions that are both scary and non-scary, as well as a creature, a new cryptid that we've invented. And again, no money. So originally our thought was like, okay, we're going to write this screenplay. We're going to have all of the stuff that we want in it from the get-go. Like, let's make something that's 110% of what we can achieve, because then if we start losing things, we've got enough in there that we're not sacrificing the real message. So when it came down to like, okay, well, now how do we execute this? We had like our hands kind of full. And we thought maybe we would go like the Monty Python route and just do like some crude puppets and like throw them at the actors and like wiggle the camera and, you know, who knows what we were thinking. But even that costs a lot of money. Even crude puppets would have eaten up like the majority of our like bite-sized budget. So we had to kind of like renegotiate. We played with a lot of different ideas. We considered literal like live animals, but like we were thinking we would go to like a national park or a nature reserve or somewhere where they did like host deer and we could like film them and then CGI fangs on them. And it was just ridiculous, honestly. Like it was going to be so time consuming and even just dangerous and expensive in its own right. So that's where we eventually ended up discussing, well, what if we went cartoon? It's Vampire, you know, we're not harkening back to the original Disney cartoon, because our animation is all scary. None of it's cute, but, we were thinking like, this is how we could kind of like reach out and touch that, you know, reference point of like, this is a children's cartoon that like, even as long ago as our grandmothers were watching, but then kind of bring in this grittier, element to it, of it being horror animation and being able to actually take our, you know, the stunts that we had planned, right. Or these animal interactions that we had planned. And instead of making them smaller, we made them bigger. Suddenly we could play you know, in such a much larger playground of like what this moment or this moment looked like. So, you know, for one example, there's a stunt that takes place in a moving vehicle and there was going to be a death sequence. And we were like, how do we strap a car to a trailer and then like three people to the car and they've got cameras strapped to them. And it was just this whole like, you know, we not only is this a massive and expensive stunt, but it's also dangerous to do without anyone to, like, regardless if you have insurance or anything else, you're going to hurt someone potentially. And we don't want that because we love these people.
Yeah.
So even if it's possible, right? Even if you like protect them as best you can, it's still just a little too hazardous to really try to attempt at our budget level. But yeah. Now we didn't have to cut that sequence.
Yeah.
Instead of having a guy like, you know, ripped out of a moving car or something like that, we can actually have that guy ripped in half. And half his body stays in the moving car, you know, and the other half flies out the window. Like, there's a level that, like, now we were able to take everything and bump it up a notch. And that's, like, kind of that extra sneaky little thing that only animation could really have brought us.
Yeah. I love that. And I cannot wait to see that part of
that
the movie.
Scene.
It's going to be sick.
Yeah, that's super cool. And it also kind of takes it to this other sort of like fantasy realm or like a psychological realm. Kind of like one of those things like you're out exploring in the forest and you eat some mushrooms you find on the ground. And then all of a sudden you are actually seeing these animations.
Yeah. So. Yes.
It's a good first person perspective. Yeah.
So I haven't personally been to Eugene. We've been to Bend.
We have been
to Bend. We used to live in Idaho. So we used to live around a lot of nature, but we're not really nature people. We're more like nature fearing people.
Yeah.
Like,
when we go camping, we're just like, we can't sleep the whole night because we like hear little noises and stuff.
And then you ask the ranger, like, okay, are there any bears? And they say, no, but beware of the moose. And you're like, shoot, why?
Beware of the vampires.
Yeah, now it's beware of the vampires.
Making an indie film, it's in a miracle of itself. And it just takes so many elements to come together and some things you have to improvise on. But you're also out there in the woods dealing with Mother Nature. So how did that come into play? And how did the filming process, were there any fun stories with like...
Like, did you have to improv on the moment because of Mother Nature and her whims?
Absolutely. So I love that you guys are nature fearing. That is hilarious and wonderful. And I'm really happy that I get to do this interview with you guys because that's like a big theme in vampires. Like, what happens when you bridge this separation that we're raised with between mankind and nature? Because we have this like disconnection, right, that I think that we even like promote to make ourselves feel more secure, to feel safer, to live in a house versus living, you know, out in the woods. It's a very different feeling. And that's like a really hilariously basic example. But we kind of like create this separation to protect ourselves. And this movie really explores the concept of like, what if a bunch of people who really don't understand just how dangerous nature can be find themselves right in the middle of it? And what if there was a nature incarnate that was also protecting nature from people like them, where they don't, when they're, you know, committing all these petty crimes, right? What if there was something watching in the woods, and how would it respond to even something as mild as littering, quote unquote, mild, you know? Because really, in reality, when you start to think about the larger impact of our actions, even those small things, right? Those small things become some of the largest issues that we have. So I don't call the vampire an eco-warrior or anything like that. I like the idea that they are nature personified, and they are just as protective and defensive and violent toward all parts of nature as nature is toward itself, animals and man included. When none of us are separate and none of us are safe, everything can be attacked by the vampire.
Yeah.
So that's like something that I really have played with a lot in terms of like the horror of the story. It's like these kids who go out and they're, you know, now at the whim of this force, you know, this natural force, the natural environment. So that's like, you know, something that we played with quite a bit. And that was like a big inspiration. And I think coming from Alaska, you learn pretty young just exactly how intense nature can be. Like, yeah, you can't really go on a hike without someone warning you about the moose or the bears or the crevasses or the glaciers or frostbite, like, whatever. Like, it doesn't matter. They're going to talk your ear off about it. So we definitely faced our fair share of hazards. We were in the woods for about 3 straight weeks for 12 hours a day, fully exposed to the elements. We had a very small crew of people. So it was the same folks day in, day out, working their asses off. We were carrying like massive amounts of gear through completely like rural territory, like just uneven terrain. Like it's hot as heck outside. We're going like a half a mile and we're carrying like a bounce that's like a 12 by 12 foot bounce. And there's like five of us just trying not to tear it on the trees. I mean, we were just overcoming like daily and hourly, you know, struggles in that way. But the one day that I will say, I think blew us all away with how intense it was a day that we were filming at the same location, you know, kind of 2 days in a row. And so the night before we'd been cooking meat over the fire and we cleaned up after ourselves. Like we were pretty conscious about all of that, but I guess like one piece of chicken or something had fallen into the fire and just charred enough that we didn't realize it was there. So the next day we get to set and there's like 10 million wasps on our set, like everywhere, like a cloud of wasps. Oh. And not only do we have like someone on our crew who was like attacked by bees as a young child, like paralyzingly afraid of bees, and one of the most important members of our crew kind of a thing. We also had 2 actors who were like deathly allergic. So we had like all of the shots that we needed. We had someone like there who could like give them in a moment's notice. But again, it's just not something you want to do.
Yeah. <you know?
laughs> So we actually ended up filming this scene. We cleared the bees. We filmed everything that we could anywhere else. We, you know, we're smoking them out. We had to get some, like, we lured them away by like leaving, you know, a little trail of food, like just off to try to like guide them out of the one space that we needed to be for like the afternoon. And in the end, we actually have a take of one of our actors, like doing his scene. And he's like in the background as he's speaking to one of the characters in the foreground. And you see him put his hand down and get stung. And he finishes the scene, dude. That's the craziest part, is that,
that
he's
actually like,
oh yeah, okay. You know, and he's still like delivering his line, but he's doing it in such a like you wouldn't know if you didn't know.
Yeah. Wow. That's like a Tony Todd Candyman kind of a moment where it's like he got stung 13 times in the mouth. But oh, those actors, man, they just keep going. Gotta finish the shot.
That's amazing. You guys literally overcame Mother Nature to make this movie.
Did you get any shots of the wasp horde, the wasp swarm?
We actually, like, there was an original sequence in the screenplay where we have, like, 2 wasps mating and they're, like, stinging each other. And so we actually did get, like, we thought that we would not be able to get that shot. And we actually got, like, a significant amount of B-roll of, like, mating and stinging wasps.
B-roll.
We are going to go with some cartoons still. Yeah. So. It's just too funny to imagine in cartoon, you know?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Love it.
So we were checking out the Indiegogo page and the film looks just sexy. It's got this element of gore and
quirky,
quirkiness, fun,
stylish, all of those great adjectives.
I think Evil Dead meets I Know What You Did Last Summer meets Who Framed Roger Rabbit meets Blair Witch Project.
Yeah.
So I love all of that. At the time of recording this, you guys have reached your initial goal on Indiegogo. So congratulations. That's amazing.
However, thank you so much.
You are now going for a stretch goal.
And yes.
For our listeners out there and anyone who wants to support this project, there's still plenty of ways to support the project. And
and really quick, just tell us what you could achieve by meeting that stretch goal.
Yeah, absolutely. So first off, our Indiegogo is at www.vampiremovie.com. So for anyone listening, like, feel free to go to that URL. It'll redirect you right to our Indiegogo page. We are currently fundraising to finish Vampire. So that's what that initial goal was. That $25,000 is us taking this beautiful archive of footage and amazing performances. We have, I mean, we've got 98% of this thing already in the can and it's gorgeous. So that $25,000 that was our initial goal is going to go toward editing, color grading, getting us, you know, our audio mixed so that it sounds nice and clear. We're also going to be doing maybe a little bit of music if we can afford it, but definitely like a score. So it's all of that stuff that takes that beautiful footage and actually makes it a movie. Now, our stretch goal means that we can do all of that, but at the highest level that we can find. You know what I mean? It gives us that extra bit of money if we find a professional who can do it for that extra $1,000. Now we have it. But in addition to that, it's not just about finishing a movie, right? It's about getting it out there. And yeah. A huge part of that is film festivals, getting the licensing that you need, paying legal fees, like getting the reviews done by lawyers that you need, the insurance that you need, on and on and on. And none of it's fun, but it is what you have to do if you want to get a movie out there. And for independent filmmakers, people don't really realize that like the most expensive part of production is the end. Oh, you know, for us, we had a very small budget, and you spend everything that you can just trying to get that movie to be the best that it can be when you actually go to capture that footage, because that's the most high stakes moment in making a movie, is whether or not you actually execute the plan that you have spent a year and a half making, you know, and maybe even a year or two before that, creating the blueprint for with a screenplay. So now when you hit post-production, in our case, well, you got this beautiful movie, right? But you're so far away from actually being finished with the project. You're really only about 50% done with the work once you actually film the whole movie. So now we're kind of in that second 50%. And I think what really differentiates our Indiegogo campaign from a lot of the ones out there is that we have actually taken the time and gotten the footage. And we're essentially like, we wanted to be able to say, hey, believe in us, bet on us, because look how good it looks. Do it because you see that it's going to be successful, because we've already accomplished these goals. We just need your help bringing it home. And I like, for us, it was a risk. I mean, it was a risk that nobody responded to our Indiegogo campaign, or we wouldn't hit that initial goal. And suddenly we're, you know, we're just going to take a lot longer to get Vampire out there. But in reality, like, this is a way that people can take the guesswork out of it. For us independent filmmakers, if you say, hey, I'm your audience, I will watch your movie, then we're going to make the movie. We're going to finish the movie. So I think it's just really important, if you're like a fan of independent film, if you're a fan of just uncensored artwork that isn't being made, you know, because of a profit motive and isn't being changed because of some executive's decision as he walks through set and just thinks he doesn't like something. You know, if you want to see something that's really coming from someone's heart into the marketplace, well, that thing is expensive, and it's being brought to, you know, life not by a massive, you know, production company. It's being brought to life by a handful of individuals, most of whom are donating their time.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like a bit of a gimme when it comes to like, hey, you're our audience. We're your creators. Let us entertain you. But help us, you know, help us get that last, you know, get it to your front door.
I love that. And there's also some really awesome perks on the Indiegogo. So there's still time to support Vampire. There, you can go to the premiere, or you can get a limited edition VHS tape.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So there's a lot of cool perks. You guys have awesome merch. The movie looks freaking amazing. I'm very excited to see it. And yeah, congratulations on hitting the initial goal. And I hope that you get to that stretch goal as well.
All right. Let's see here. So I have a few closing questions for you. What would be your dream horror movie remake to work on?
Ooh, that's a good one. So I feel like this might be a bit of an unpopular answer. I love the original screenplay for the Hellraiser movie.
Yes.
So Clive Barker's like original Hellraiser screenplay is so visual, it's so sensory, it's so intense. And the movie itself that was made is so good. Like, I don't even know how I could top that. You know, like when Brother Frank reincarnates through the floor, and they have the wax sculptures of him that they like melt and play in reverse. So it's like this body is like rising through. I mean, I can't top that. But at the same time, like, that story is just so rich. I love this idea of like sexual sadists from outer space coming to show us the real truth of pain. You know, there's this really like there's such an amazing amount of lore with this like kink box that you find when you're not looking for it. But also if you're like a seedy flea market dealer, like you might just happen upon it. Like it's just this like funny little, it's such a weird little culture that they've created, you know, that I would love to like, I think that I could add to or create something like that was really inspired by that original screenplay. So I feel like if I had to remake it, like I would just have a lot of fun.
I love that.
I love that you're taking on one of the heavy hitters.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
I know. I'm like, I know that there's a bunch of movies out there that like I, that almost did it for me. Right. But like just kind of fell short right at the end. But in reality, like, I don't usually want to remake something. Like, I love original concepts. I love original stories. And so, like, when I look at, like, what would I want to add to, right? Then some of these, like, bigger franchises that have, like, 12, 13, 14 remakes. Like, that's something where I think a lot of horror writers want to have their shot, right, to add something to some of these franchises.
So you mentioned that your director worked on the documentary film The Last Blockbuster in
Bend, Oregon.
About 2.5 hours away from Eugene-ish. We've been to Bend, and that was sort of like one of our bucket list vacations to go to that Last Blockbuster.
That was my birthday wish one year, so we went and we just rented a bunch of horror movies.
And one of the segments on our shows is we talk about what our staff pick would be, or like if a movie is a staff pick. So we actually wanted to ask you, if you were at the Blockbuster, what would be your staff pick? What would be up there next to Vampire on the staff picks?
So I'll give you guys one of my like favorite movies that I've seen in the last couple of years. It is a French film. It's called Raw. For all you cannibal fans out there, it's a good one. It's subtle. It's artsy. It's graphic. It's intense. It's emotional. It's a story about young women. The whole like third act is like really unsettling and very worth getting through. And I feel like even if it's not your style of movie, which I could totally see, if I like, if I'm talking to cannibal fans, then this may not be what you're expecting, right? But it is really good. I would say it's like a really good piece of artwork in addition to being a very excellent horror movie. It's very unsettling.
That is a great staff pick.
I agree. And I'm also a big fan of scenes that have songs in them. And that has a really good song scene where she's like putting on makeup or something in front of the mirror. And it's just her kind of dancing in front of the mirror. Oh, so good. Really good choice.
I applaud that. Great choice. But we just wanted to say thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about Vampire. It looks absolutely amazing and we can't wait to see it. Is there any other place where we should send our viewers, our listeners?
Indiegogo is the www.vampiremovie.com. On Instagram, we are Vampire Movie, and on Facebook, we are just Vampire. So those are all of our socials.
Sweet. Nice. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much. It's been so fun talking to you about all things vampire and horror.
Thank you guys. You were wonderful. And just congratulations on your podcast. It's a blast.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you. Congrats on Vampire.
Can't wait to see you. Bye.
Thank you guys.
Next up, we have Gregory Cahill and Adam Metropolis of The Nexus. 8 disturbingly twisted tales showcase the depths that an insidious corporation will sink to prey on desperate people, conjuring nightmarish manifestations of their primal human desires. Let's check out a trailer for The Nexus.
Dating. Fitness.
Feel the burn, beauties.
Wellness. Leisure. Even real estate.
Oh my God, this is perfection!
Imagine a world with all your desires integrated into one simple solution.
Did you try the breakup app? It's free.
Let us connect you.
This is the voice of miracles.
I feel safer than a crab in a coconut now.
There must have been some sort of miscommunication.
Wait, the therapist is no good. The app's no good.
$30 a month for this shit.
Redefine happiness in your pathetic, meaningless life. Redefine happiness in your pathetic, meaningless life. Meaningless life.
Take control of your life today.
It's scarier than a panda in pajama pants out there.
Location, location, location!
It's supposed to be therapeutic.
Just an easy monthly payment of...
Thank you so much for joining us in Gutted Horror Podcast. We have Greg Cahill and Adam Metropolis. You two have made this awesome horror comedy anthology called The Nexus.
We actually had the opportunity to meet with you guys in downtown LA at The Vale, this nice little kind of hole-in-the-wall bar that I had never been to before for a screening of The Nexus. And we were just, we loved it. We loved watching it with a crowd, an audience. We loved meeting you guys afterwards. So thank you so much for inviting us to that. But tell us a little bit about what is The Nexus.
Yeah, so basically the concept was, you know, it's kind of like we're living in an age where you have everything at your fingertips and you can communicate with anyone instantly. But ironically, everyone's feeling very isolated, very alienated, very neurotic. So it's kind of like this, the opposite of what you would expect seems to be happening. I think a lot of people in this world, by virtue of feeling insecure, they want to find some sort of quick fix for whatever their particular insecurity might be. Instead of actually working on yourself, oh, there's this quick thing I can do to solve my problem. And we're kind of elevating that to the horror level where there are all these quick fixes available from this one company that provides everything. Everything filters through this one company, and they can provide a solution to every problem you could think of. But in our case, in the case of The Nexus, which is this, you know, it's almost like a Google or an Amazon where everything you do is filtered through this one company. Every solution they provide has some horrifying element to it. So it's kind of like this like horrific bait and switch situation where, you know, they're selling you, you know, for example, like in one of our episodes, there's a guy with a drinking problem and he, you know, tries this alcohol replacement drink and becomes addicted to it and becomes homicidal because of it. It's that kind of thing where it's just like, you know, you create a problem and sell the solution to it, and the solution just creates more problems.
Yeah, and I love that it's the company and the different apps or the different facets of the company that are kind of connecting the vignettes, because there's about eight or so vignettes in the totality of the movie. It's just showing different sides of like how people interact with technology, and I think it's just fun to think about like how a new technology or something that is not human is like scary to people, and then taking that to the extreme.
And I love what you said about the quick fix. One of the vignettes that it reminds me of is the one Badonk, and I think it's called Badonk.
I love that. I love that like one. I think that might be
Adam directed that one.
Yeah, nice one. And I love it. It's just like this hyperbolized version of this is how you get the body that you want. This is how you get your Badonk.
There's a running theme of like, you know, kind of repression and like suppressing things and not, and also just like the desperation, this culture, everything is. And we, you know, we, Greg and I have been in the entertainment industry for like 15 years, and we're currently going through like a really, it's like a dumpster fire right now. The entertainment industry is such a mess. And it's just like, you see how desperate and like, it's how it trickles down. It's like, just, you know, like higher level people are having to take lower positions, and it just, you know, just kind of corporate greed across the map. And it just kind of like, I think we're kind of just having like a comical look at like the absurdity of like the culture we live in and how like everything is just broken basically.
And of course, what better way to do that through than the lens of horror?
Yeah, because like a lot of people compare The Nexus to Black Mirror, which I think is a fair comparison. But Adam and I talked about this. We were like, Black Mirror has a very serious tone, but we didn't want to do that. We wanted people to be able to laugh at this stuff because it is kind of cathartic. So it's horrifying, but we try to do it in a way that's campy and fun.
Right.
And you do deal with a lot of current, like pressing issues in today that cause a lot of anxiety for most people that I know, such as the housing crisis or like trying to buy a home, how impossible it is. And to the lengths that you'll go to get that home. I won't spoil anything, but there is a vignette that touches on that in a very hyperbolized way,
yeah. Which
that was
couples
really fun
interacting
to
through an app, or mm-hmm. like seeking revenge on a boyfriend through an app, like all these things, they make you laugh on the inside. And there's a lot of outwardly funny, nicely timed comedic moments. And a lot of times with horror comedy, it's kind of hard to find the balance between horror and comedy. So how did you sort of find the voice for Nexus as horror comedy?
Like, I think that naturally we kind of settled. Like, I've been into writing horror for a long time, and sometimes I go like really super dark, and I feel like you kind of even out where you're just kind of like, you realize like everything's kind of absurd, and you're, you know, I think it's kind of like our voice kind of matches like that. Like, we have another partner too, but Greg and I have like we work on other projects, and we're kind of developing the feature now and trying to, and we, you know, that's why we think that the Nexus has like a lot of legs, because we could, you know, these are type of issues you can just find, you know, like endless issues like this that you can keep doing. It's funny, like some of the things we're writing in the feature are just like, you're like, wow, these are like, you know, just crazy takes on all the absurdity we like live in. It's like there's never ending. But I think it's like partially just, I think it's naturally like our voice, and we're trying to, you know, you're still sculpting it. Obviously, like, this is a low budget thing, and we're looking to do like a you know, a higher budget version and stuff. And it's like it was a run and gun, like, you know, like filmmaking boot camp, really, this thing.
Yeah. So
it's kind of like figuring out, and we luckily worked with a lot of really good like editors. Like, I've been a post producer for a long time, so I have like really great post contacts, and everybody's like awesome and trying to help us out. And I think it's a lot of like, that's kind of like the feel, like, you kind of, you know, you, when you're doing something like Badonk, it's like hard not to be like comical, but it's easy with the shorts, without having to really have a full arc, like, in which I think we actually do a decent job of in a short period of time. But it's, you don't have to, like, you know, it's like Twilight Zone. You have like a setup and then like a payoff, and then you don't really, you don't need to like overthink it too much. So like, you can have absurd endings that kind of just come out of nowhere and things like that. And I think it's just kind of like our voice, but it is a delicate balance that we've had to adjust. Cause like Badonk, when we shot it, was really dark at the end. Like, it was really brutal. And like the actress had actually a really good performance at the end. And Greg kept like, he's like, you got to pull it back. Really, it's a good performance. And we ended up cutting it way down because it was kind of like, didn't fit the tone. It was just, so it's kind of big. That's partially why it's really good to have a partner that you kind of, you know, that you kind of vibe with, that kind of gets the, you know, you get each other, so you can pull each other back at times. So.
And so, mentioning your third partner, Andrew Marks. So Gregory Cahill and Adam Metropolis and Andrew Marks, these are our three directors for the Nexus. Since there were three directors on this project, all of the vignettes seem to flow together really nicely. I want to know how collaboration was. What did that look like? And were you able to get the three of you to have all of these eight vignettes interweave so nicely?
Yeah, like every script we would workshop as a group, like it would start as, oh, you know, I'm thinking of a, you know, a story about, you know, this happens to this person. And then would talk about it and come up with, you know, throw some ideas around. Then each one of us would write our episodes, send the scripts, would get together just like this on a Zoom and talk it through. And, you know, it was cool because everyone has really good taste and everyone likes a lot of the same stuff. And I think everyone was on the same page in terms of theme and tone. And so would give each other notes on the script. And then what was cool is when you have a little collective like this, when you actually go to shoot these things, you know, we all helped each other out on each other's shoots, you know, like for Adam's stuff, like I'd do lighting, you know, on my stuff, Adam was running like all of the logistics and, you know, it's basically like my production manager. And then Andrew has a background in VFX. So he was able to do like, you know, for example, like the Nexus logo and, you know, some of the VFX and stuff and motion graphics. So it was kind of cool, like, you know, and we also, you know, through doing these, started working with the same people over and over. And it kind of became like this cool little, you know, collective of people who are just excited to work on something that's fun. And, you know, the shoots were all quick for the most part. I mean, some of them were just a day, you know, some of them were multiple days, but it started to become like this little cool little group, like a little family that worked on all these projects. And we met some really enthusiastic people through doing it. And it's like, you know, these people are going to be lifelong friends now. And that's one of my favorite things about filmmaking.
I love that you say that, because it's almost like every time that we interact or speak with indie filmmakers, you can see the passion and the community. And I think that is one of the coolest things. It does build up so much community, which is why we feel it's so important to support these things. I've been in the industry as well, in other facets, and Elise has as well. So that's one of the things that we really enjoy.
Is the camaraderie and
the community and all of that.
And especially on indie projects, it's a lot of fun. So
yeah.
And you could tell like the fun comes through in the Nexus watching it. You can tell that everyone had fun making this project.
I mean, I feel like people know, but they don't really know how hard it is to make a movie. And you're saying like some shoots were a day, some shoots were a couple of days. I was curious to know how long the project took to kind of come to fruition, because I know sometimes smaller movies could take years.
From the start of filming to the end of filming the last vignette, how long do you think it took?
It was a little less than a year. I think the first one we shot was No Connection, which is a home invasion story. We shot that at my house. I think it was March of 2022, if I'm not messing up my dates. And then the last one we shot was, help me out, Adam, what was the last one?
It was Best Offer.
Best Offer, thank you. That was January 2023. And I remember we shot that on my birthday, because like they surprised me with a Nexus birthday cake.
Yeah. Were you hesitant to eat it? Like you, like a tentacle would come out and like, you know, some Beetlejuice style thing or something like that?
Yeah. I mean, luckily they didn't poison the cake or anything.
Yeah, it was more like after a leaf of shooting everything, more just like drinking heavily.
Sounds about right.
I was gonna say, that's when you realize that you step back a layer and you're inside the Truman Show.
You're inside the Nexus.
Well, yeah. It's kind of like sad though to finish, because you're like, after doing everything, you're kind of like, I mean, like we like just love doing it. And that's the whole catch 22 of like, you know, movies, is that they're expensive and then you just want to keep doing them. Like, we're not like unrealistic about how brutal this industry is to really like make money, but there is a way to carve out a space where you can like continue it and have a decent living. There's plenty of like indie filmmakers that have had like great, like, you know, careers, and especially horror, because horror is like, you know, it has a built-in audience, and it's like also like very, it's, you can do minimal things and kind of contain things. And that's what a lot of our stuff is. And we do like effects, and we love to do some bigger like creature stuff and things like that. So hopefully that's where like, you know, getting bigger budgets comes in hand. But, you know, we just love doing it. Like you have to be kind of psycho to keep doing this, because like it's the only way that you're like going to keep it going. Cause most people, everybody like wants to do it, but like, you just got to be like insane and be like, we just have to keep going. We have to keep going.
Yeah. It's a much needed degree of insanity.
Yes. Well, we are glad that you guys are both insane and that you made this collection of anthology films.
I do have a question. Okay. So we do love watching indie movies, indie horror movies specifically. And I do like to imagine those unexpected surprises that happen when you are making an indie film. Was there anything that you were not expecting to happen, or something that went wrong that ended up being a pleasant surprise or just a disastrous surprise?
Well, I'll say quickly one for me, because there's a lot of things like that happen. Some I don't even know if we should talk about, so we don't get like Subdue. But the hardest shoot by far was Subdue. Was the alcohol replacement. And that was, we had like, and that was like, we had like really good actors, and they were like really like, a lot of people had done a lot of favors. We had a couple like pretty like, you know, some up and coming actors that were like, you know, taking their rate cuts and things like that. And it's just, they're just, people were awesome. But we went into it, and this is just the thing you can never predict. And it was like one of the worst rainstorms and coldest days ever. I forgot what month that was. I think it was like maybe January, February. It was like brutal. And the lead actor, Eric Potempa, who's like a really great actor, he's from New York. He was in town, and him and his wife actually like were both in it. And he's a great actor. And he was like, it was cold and really brutal. And I was like, I didn't know how we could have kept going, but you can't really just adjust the sets. Like, people are giving you like, you know, locations and things like that. And you can't really, so we're like, we just got to do it. And I think ironically, it ended up being a really good, like kind of adding production value and giving a really good aesthetic. And It was, I think it like came out really well, but it was not a fun shoot. Like it was cold as hell. We were bringing out towels and trying to like get him, like he was like shaking. And I think you can see it a little bit in the performance, like at the end, like he's really not comfortable.
And so, you guys filmed this in LA?
It doesn't rain.
Yeah, it was
in
Burbank, and it was just like a friend let us use her house, and it was just really it was a rough day and a long day, and because you really got to, you know, you're packing it all, packing a ton of stuff in, 3, 4, 5 pages in a day is, it gets to be a lot. That's like, you know, yeah, you know, soap opera style. So
yeah,
well, so it was like, you know, it was a rough day, but I think it came out pretty good.
It did. It was a wonderful vignette, and I think having the subdued shakes would really add to that. So if he had cold shakes, I think that just adds to the character more.
When we were shooting the breakup episode, it was the morning of, and I got a call from Adam that him, his girlfriend, and someone else all like tested positive for COVID.
Oh, man.
Like, oh, God. So basically, we had to shoot that episode. There was 3 of us on the crew. It was me, my friend Paul on sound, and my friend Michael doing all grip electric. And it was just, it was the 3 of us doing everything. And it was like, it was rough. It was really crazy. But we just shot all day and night, and we got it done miraculously. But it's like the 3 of us were like shooting, lighting, sound, props, special effects, like doing everything. And it was crazy. It was just like, it was some serious teamwork.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the other thing about indie filmmaking is like, you have to wear multiple hats, even if you're not expecting to, it's going to come up, but that adds to the fun and to the stories afterwards. Right. So you guys, congratulations. Nexus is on Tubi and Amazon Prime. Tubi for free. And then Amazon Prime, it's 99 cents to rent. Correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Something like that. It's $1 or $2. So, you know, if you're a big spender, you can jump on Prime and check us out. We appreciate it.
Yeah. And of course, you know, Tubi has the ads. So if you don't want the ads, then
but
only
a
buck.
We did mention before we started filming today that Greg, you actually had a choice in where these ads went in Tubi. And I have to say, we watched it on Tubi last night. We rewatched it on Tubi last night, and the ads are placed pretty well. So if you are not a fan of Tubi because of the ads are placed very strategically. So give it a whirl.
But a ton of horror fans are on Tubi and love Tubi because it has such an extensive library of movies and a lot of obscure stuff and a lot of independent stuff. So that's really an awesome place to be. I think a lot of people will check it out on Tubi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so too.
I didn't realize how great they're like, Greg kind of turned me on to them. I was like, man, they get like some like pretty deep cut stuff too. I was kind of surprised. Yeah, really. Yeah.
So yeah, we're fans of physical media, and we go into certain used DVD. We love DVDs. We don't have the space for VHS, although we love VHS tapes as well. But anytime we go to like a used DVD place, we have certain rules. So like if we find a Blu-ray for $2 or under, we will grab it if it's in the horror genre. It doesn't matter what it is, just to check it out. Or like any like DVD under $1. But we find some like really awesome stuff.
Yeah. And I think horror fans are willing to take the chance on something that is affordable. $1 or $2 on Amazon Prime is not bad at all. But we will have links to the Nexus, the Instagram, and whatisthenexus.net in our show notes. But is there anywhere else where our listeners can find and support the Nexus besides Tubi and Amazon Prime?
Well, as you said, whatisthenexus.net is our official site, and that has links to everywhere you can currently watch it, as well as our social media. But some exciting news, we will soon be available on Apple TV as well.
Awesome.
Fortunately, they do not give us a release date. So just keep checking, and we'll keep checking too. And once it's there, we will announce it like crazy.
Nice.
That's awesome.
And also, you can follow us on Instagram. There's some fun stuff that like behind the scenes stuff. And that's what is the Nexus as well.
That's actually how we found out about the film. So we had posted some story, and I used a song by the t-shirt that you're wearing, Greg, the Sidewalks and Skeletons. And then you're like, hey, I love that band. Check out our movie. And we're like, all right. And we came to the premiere, and it was like super awesome. We mostly do Instagram. So We will also have that link for you guys on Instagram.
If anybody's East Coast, I have an investor in a brewery called Rejects, and July 12th, which is far out, we're doing like it's a really dope brewery, and he does a lot of live events and screenings and music. And so we're doing a live screening there on the 12th of August, which would be really fun.
12th of July.
Yeah. Wait, 12th nice. Of July. Yeah. And then, so there's that coming up, and then there's, hopefully, like, we have that. We're in the middle of the feature, so hopefully, like, that will come to fruition at some point. So,
are you allowed to talk about what is coming up next for the Nexus?
Well, I don't know. The big studios just won't let us talk. we can. Yeah, Greg, do you want to talk about a little bit?
So we are writing a bigger. We lovingly call it Big Nexus. we're writing the bigger. Like a big feature, bigger budget feature film version of the Nexus, which is also an anthology, because we love being able to tell all these different stories about how different aspects of technology and whatnot are affecting different people and, you know, whatever walk of life they happen to be in. So we're currently writing that now. And once we're done writing, we want to start looking for some cool actors to get involved with it. And fingers crossed.
Nice.
Right. I'm a longtime fan of anthologies. And there's some great ones. And, you know, obviously a fan of like Creepshow and a lot of these like classics. But I always feel like they kind of drop the ball sometimes on the wraparounds. So Greg and I are really trying to like put a lot of effort into like a really like dope wraparound that will tie into everything. And so we're going over that with like a fine tooth comb and trying to make sure that really works. And I think that will really anchor everybody to the story. And I think it should really work to be a memorable standout.
And we want it to gross too.
Yeah, way more gore. Wait
to see that one. Make sure you let us know when that one is getting close to finishing.
We have one last question for you guys before we leave or get cut off. we love Blockbuster. Obviously, we talk about it all the time on our podcast. So if you guys were staff members at a Blockbuster or video store, is there a particular horror anthology that would make it into your staff picks besides the Nexus?
I worked at Hollywood Video, which is basically Blockbuster years ago.
I was a Hollywood Video guy. We always have this debate. And yes, we also appreciate the mom and pop VHS video stores, yes, but we use Blockbuster.
We love them all. Yeah.
Blockbuster used to edit the movies, so I was like so frustrated with like and stuff like that. And I was like, I think like one of the classics, just because like it had a really cool wraparound, was Asylum. Like back in the day, I really loved that one. But I think like ultimately, like you can't like something like Tales from the Dark Side or Creepshow, like one of those like were super fun. And there's some contemporary ones that are pretty good too. But those old school ones are the ones. And of course the Karen Black classic, the killer doll that everyone talks to with
the Trilogy of Terror.
That's it.
Yeah, Trilogy of Terror. And that was like a made for TV movie. They just don't do those anymore. That was like actually freaky. And so yeah, there's been so many great ones over the years.
Nice. How about you, Greg?
I would have to put Body Bags in there.
John Carpenter, right? As an actor. Carpenter,
like everybody did that. That was like Wes Craven was involved.
And there's a newer one I really like called Southbound. I thought that was a pretty cool anthology, actually. Yeah, it's kind of a desert horror anthology. I think it was like 2015, something like that.
Nice. I haven't heard that one. Check that one out.
Well, thank you so much, you guys. I think that brings us to or near our end.
No, I just want to thank you guys so much for coming on the show. It was awesome seeing you guys again. And we just wish you the best of luck with Nexus. And we'll put all the links in our show notes and on Instagram, all that stuff.
Yeah, and we'll keep an eye out for the Big Nexus.
Thanks a lot for having us. Appreciate it. Thanks for supporting. These things are really tough, and it's great to have any support. And I don't know if you guys are going to be at Monster Palooza, but we'll probably be there. So.
Awesome. Okay. Yes. We will be there. Yeah. We will be at Monster Palooza for sure.
It's like the best one. We're going to be there. You're doing like a Hellraiser reunion this year. It's like you can't.
Yeah. There's some big ones, and it'll be cool to see you guys there. Cool.
Same. Thank you again so much for having us.
Thank you, guys. I'm glad that we didn't get cut off. I was like, oh no, we're going to get cut off.
90 seconds to spare.
Yeah. We got it. Thank you so much, listeners and or viewers, for taking the time to listen to our first Indie Spotlight episode. It means a lot to us. It means a lot to these filmmakers. We had such a great time talking to these filmmakers, and we are very grateful to have had them on the show.
And make sure to check out our show notes to find out where you can support and or find these fresh guts of the horror world.
Thank you sincerely again from the bottom of our guts for watching and or listening. This has been another episode of
Gutted.